Hello, everyone, and welcome to another expert interview at the Innovation and Creativity Summit 2017. I'm very happy to have Lee Stringer with us today. Lee is from the architecture firm EYP, and she is a workplace strategist and researcher with a particular emphasis on things like how your workplace can affect your creativity, energy levels, team dynamics, all of those sorts of things. Lee, it's very good to have you with us today.
Oh, thanks so much for having me. My pleasure.
So for people who aren't aware of what a workplace strategist is, could you give us a brief background as to how you got into it, what it is, and how that sort of feeds into creativity?
So I'm an architect by training, and one of the many aspects of designing a building is the front-end work that you need to do to ask the organization that you're working for that's building the building how they work, how they might work more effectively, what's working now, how they want to work differently in the future. So workplace strategist is kind of the advanced team on the in the architectural design world, somebody who comes in and really understands more about the business and about individual and group work and all those sorts of things. So working many years helping organizations figure out how big, what shape their building should look like, I effectively have been in there rolling up my sleeves for a long time figuring this out. And one of the big questions comes up: how do we make our space more productive? How do we make it more healthy? How do we make it more creative? Innovation is the thing of the future. We know this is where all the growth is happening. We want to do more of it. What does it look like? So that is part of the reason I ended up on my search, writing a lot about health and well-being and productivity, and innovation is a huge part of that.
And one of the reasons I'm so excited to have you here is you've actually got the scientific insights as to what actually affects performance. And the reason that's important is a lot of people look at companies like video game publishers or Silicon Valley tech startups who've got fireman's poles in the middle of offices and beanbags everywhere and table tennis tables. And they think, well, if we put those things in our office, they're also going to make us more creative. What's your view on the way that these high-tech companies approach creativity, and whether or not that's also applicable to more traditional companies?
Well, I think that high-tech companies are getting better. I would say in the beginning, it was in the beginning, 20 years ago, I don't know, they were trying new ways, young groups of people getting together. Hey, wouldn't it be fun if we had a ping pong table and make that part of the culture? And it's from a culture perspective, it's wonderful. It's a cool, fun thing. But I think more and more companies like Google and Apple and others have seen that, actually having a little place for a breather, to take a rest from staring at a computer for 12 hours a day is actually a really good thing from a productivity standpoint. There's a lot of research that tells us that. Putting our mind in a relaxed state, increases creativity and alpha waves and all kinds of good things that many people are studying these days. And I'd say that, one of the most aha moments for me on the iTech side was Amazon, when they put in those super green rooms. I don't know if you've seen them. They're these huge green, like bubble-like environments. And it's almost and very intentionally created to be biophilic and restorative psychologically. I mean, it's very expensive space. Amazon traditionally has not been a company that spends a lot of money extraneously. So when they started doing things like that, I thought, oh, okay, well, there's definitely more of a science behind it. Sorry about my dog.
No, it's fine.
So that's part of my health and wellness plan, to keep a little puppy to hug. Hold on a second. So I'll include her in the interview. But so one of the things that I'm noticing also is that a lot of other organizations outside of IT are seriously looking at not just the ping pong table, but certainly at greenery or at mindfulness studios or yoga rooms or things like that. That it's really, again, it's science-based, and there's a good reason that it's all about, decreasing burnout at the same time as increasing creativity. But there's all this, so great. We could talk forever about this, but the great research around walking and what that does for creativity, working in high spaces or open spaces actually helps increase creativity. Something about the vastness, like you walk into a church or a temple and it's big and open and wide and your mind expands. Similar kind of thing happens in larger open spaces, within within a work environment. So it's interesting to see that happening. But you're seeing more walking meetings, and it's behavior as much as it is a space is starting to shift.
I think what everyone's asking themselves right now is, can we get a quick look at that puppy?
I'm so sorry. So this is Pebbles. Aww. Pebbles is a Cavalier King Charles, and very much a puppy still, but needs some loving. There's a lot of interesting, for those of you who work at home or maybe work in an office that have pets, there's a lot of evidence that shows that having a pet at work actually decreases your stress levels. I was talking to the Motley Fool, and if you're familiar with them, it's a financial services company here in the DC area, and they bring in puppies on Saturdays for their employees to love and hug when they're having a really stressful day. So, wow, that's amazing. You know, when they have to come in extra, they give them a little bonus by a basket of puppies. How hilarious is that?
That's lovely. But as much as I'm interested in hugs and puppies, I'm more interested in the science. So you said there's a lot of scientific evidence around what makes spaces more facilitative to creativity. Can we talk about some of the studies that you're referring to? And you mentioned, for example, one about the size of the space around you. What does that tell us about how that affects creativity?
So there are a couple of studies that looked at just putting people in very small rooms and having me do different sorts of tasks. And I'm not going to remember the scientists who did it right off, but it was a good mix of people I respected. And they effectively were looking at smaller and taller rooms for heads down work and or creative work. And they found that creative work, when I say that heads down, I mean more math or more quantitative or perhaps transactional type work versus work that requires a lot of thinking and outside the box thinking. And they found that raising the ceiling by just a couple of feet in those tiny rooms actually helped quite a bit. And I think we're starting to see a lot of companies explore that as well. I mean, it's very expensive, right, to make tall space. It's very expensive. To make a nice big atrium or to make a space that's a taller, more interesting cafeteria or collaborative space. So, there does need to be a lot more rationale behind why we do it. It just can't look cool. And we're starting to see that there is something there. And, so that's kind of interesting. I think also this real interest in having, you know, from a creativity perspective, having enclosed and open spaces. So we all love the big open space where, and Steve Jobs talks about this a lot with Pixar in particular. He designed it so there's one set of bathrooms right in the building, and everybody had to run into each other going to the bathroom. It's pretty big open space, by the way, where that happens. And that's great. I think that's really very supportive of those collaborations. However, my research is showing me that it's really this combination of being able to kind of the caves in commons, right? Being able to go into a cave and actually sit and think hard about what's next, about what you've just learned and what you've just been talking about with a colleague, and turning that into something new. And it's kind of that more narrow mindset. And when you look at Shisikmi High and all these folks who are looking at flow, often it's talks about writers and people who spend a lot of time doing very creative work in tiny little houses behind their big house, right? It's a little writer's nook or writer's hut. And I find that recreating that writer's hut in one way or another for folks in the workplace is really helpful too. Again, supporting that mix of, you need both. You need both the big and the little.
I'm so glad that you say that, partially because this is the same way that I interpret the research and the way I talk to clients about it. A lot of companies fall into the trap of thinking there's one type of design that's going to solve all the problems. And so they think, okay, either we have to choose a fully open plan office or cubicles. And both have their advantages and disadvantages. But for things like creativity, people need, and there's so much evidence now that's saying people need different mental states to work through problems and to in one time go through divergent thinking and think of lots of ideas. There's evidence which suggests things like open spaces help that. But then you actually need time and space to do something with those ideas. And I think that relates back to what you were talking about having these more constrained areas where You're not as distracted. There's fewer things interrupting you, and you can focus on the work and actually sit down and do the work and refine it. And that's what you need to actually turn thousands of ideas into one real golden nugget.
That's true. You know, there's a researcher who teaches at the Darden School of Business here in Virginia, who Gene Litka, who is looking at design thinking. And I know Roger Martin at Toronto has also been thinking about this for a long time. And a lot of you are talking about deductive or inductive. I think there's all these kinds of ways, historical ways that we've been using to science, law. All these places have been based on history, right? Based on historical, an apple falls, all apples will fall. There's this kind of historical, looking back on the past and projecting the future. And I think one of the ways that our creative mind really needs to think outside the box, we've got some wicked problems to solve. We need to, it's not incremental change, it's pretty massive change in many areas. And so Jean talks about what she calls abductive thinking, which is there's something called backcasting, where you say, let's just shoot for the moon. We're in 10 years, we want to be here. Well, how the heck did we get here? I don't know. You know, just throw things on the wall. There's a whole process that she and many others are really starting to develop. But this idea of, I think also the space that you're in, being able to support more openness, more freer ideas, less looking in the past and more looking at unique, creative, outside the box, outside your industry kinds of thinking and planning and ideas is really, really critical. So anyway, I thought that was a very interesting term. I had not heard that before I talked with her, but makes sense.
So the sort of projects that you do in your firm, EYP,
Hmm.
what sort of remit is there to think about creativity specifically? Is this something that companies are now asking more for, or is it all about the bottom line and getting as many hours of work done as possible?
You know, can you have the same conversation or same say two things at the same time? Because I think that's always the case. Yes, the bottom line is really important. That's kind of table stakes, unfortunately or fortunately. So we have to use our creative mind to find more ways to insert creativity in the budgets and the constraints that we have. And I think that folks, it's different triggers that kind of open folks up to thinking about something more creative in their space. It might be health. Actually, health is a big one lately where people are saying, you know what, all this research about health and the need to stand and not sit so much and to get outside more. Gosh, you know, when I look at our workplace, it's a bunch of cubicles with people sitting down in them and not able to move for 12 hours a day. This is not healthy, is it? So we kind of start, you know, it depends on what the issue is that's most important to their business. But I'm finding, you know, a lot of the companies that we work are health related. So that's a way in to have a discussion about, all right, well, let's talk about health, all right, productivity. All right, well, all right, let's talk about the day in the life that you want to really create for your people. What does that look like? I think the other trigger that comes up, I guess it's bottom line related, but it does help to help folks. It does help to reshape the conversation, and that is around this idea that no one's in the office anymore. So we're super, super mobile today, whether we like to admit it or not. I spend a lot of time stalking people, and I mean, sorry, following people around and finding how they work and how they want to work and what's working, what's not working in their day. And if you walk through any office anywhere, there's often not as many people as there are desks, right? In fact, about a third of the people are at your notice it in your office. It's really surprising, actually. And part of it, we're still working our batushkas off. We're just doing it on the road with clients, you know, in a meeting somewhere. And so a lot of our clients will come to us and say, well, no one's in the office anymore. Why are we building these big behemoth buildings? And we're, you know, of course, have to agree. You're right. It is true. People still want to have a place at the office. They still want to call it home away from home. How do we do that? You know, what does that really look like now? Do we really want to build a bunch of, for lack of a better word, cubicles that no one sits in? Or is there a more interesting, more meaningful, more thoughtful environment that we can create? And I find that those are two avenues that are working lately. Again, it's bottom line driven always. But I like that. I like that. I mean, business is business. I mean, come on, you know, at the end of the day, there is kind of money coming in the door, and we need to think about that as part of creating a sustainable kind of organization. However, to do it in a way that's really going to attract the best talent and make folks who work there, or not make them, but just encourage them to feel their very best and their most engaged. I think that's what we're seeing more discussion about. I think all these Gallup polls, I don't know if you follow those in the UK, but there's a big Gallup poll that came out lately about the state of the American workforce anyway. And one of the big deals, big headlines this time around was that people want to work at home 3 to 4 days a week. Wow. And that's how they feel most engaged. Not one day, not 2 days, but they want to be at home a lot, which I was a little shocked at, but maybe not, you know, because they have, and this is another thing that gets into creativity a bit, as well as engagement, and that is control. So the more control employees have about where, when, how they work, the more not only will their stress level reduce, but it also reduces heart disease, which I found fascinating. It was a really interesting study that was done by Karasek and Theorell, who did this huge epidemiological study of like the entire country of Sweden or something. And they looked at all these different job types, and they found that people had more control of their environment, had less heart disease, less stress, more productive. And I think also, you know, when you're doing creative work, sometimes you need that flexibility to be able to pick and choose where, how, and when you do it. Sometimes it's late at night. That's okay. Sometimes it's really early in the morning. Sometimes it's walking around, you know, outside. That's it should be perfectly acceptable. And so companies, you know, that awareness of what that really looks like and how that feels, it's a big transition for us.
And let's talk a bit more about this wellness and energy management aspect and stress management aspect, because I love the idea of the individual being able to be creative, but if there's something out there which is preventing them from getting their work done, that's also going to prevent them from feeling good enough to do their best creative work. So from the way that you design buildings, what have you found? Let's look at the positive and the negative. What have you found really harms wellness and energy levels in buildings, like very poorly designed ones? And then how do you address that by designing them to be more effective and more conducive to good, healthy workers?
So some bad things, lack of choice. There's only one place that an individual worker can really work. They're kind of stuck in one area. Sometimes they can't be helped if you're attached to a piece of equipment, but, you know, for a lot of us, there really is some choice if we put that in. A second biggie is lighting. If there's one thing that we can improve in our workplace, and I think we'll transform the built environment over the next 100 years, it's going to be lighting. There's all this new circadian lighting coming out, which changes during the day. It really impacts our sleep levels and our energy levels and all kinds of things. If you see a circadian light versus a regular light side by side, you'd be shocked. It's like we've been living in the dark for 200 years, I mean, since we've been working inside, you know, from factories on, industrial revolution on. But so that's a biggie. I think the really, really poor lighting, and it's not just bright or non-bright light. It's really sophistication about lighting. Another is no green space, no access to green, no windows. Windows are, you know, it's hard to fix that, if you will, but there's a lot you can do to work around it to actually green your space, create a biophilic environment. So one of the things, the new things that architects are really jumping on, I was just talking to a science writer who wrote this book, The Nature Fix, and talks about how much we love and need to be among nature. Florence Williams, she's great. But we were chatting about biophilia and how important it is to mimic nature, even if you're not putting real nature in the workspace or have access to that very quickly, because we do need a certain amount of it every day. You can do that with screens. You can do it with fake plants. It doesn't even have to be real. We can fool ourselves, use all kinds of Jedi mind tricks to relax ourselves, that sort of thing. Other ways, I mentioned, you know, being stuck but not moving. You know, it's not just sit to stand, you know, and there's a lot of new furniture out there, which is great. But also moving around during the day. We used to move 8 or 9 miles every day back in the hunter-gatherer days. I was talking to some paleoanthropologists who study modern hunter-gatherers, and they follow them around and they see, well, you know, if all we're doing is scavenging and hunting and that kind of behavior, they found that we're moving pretty much all day. From that, you know, our body's made from that to being so still is not good, and for many reasons, happiness included, and picks that. So other ways, let's see, so many. Nutrition, I mean, I don't know. So how many of us have, you know, donuts sitting out or popcorn or pretty crappy things on the counter? And it's just so easy to grab that unhealthy food. It's kind of a pain to have fresh produce every day or to you know, put that out or remember to pick it up on a regular basis. But, wow, does it make a difference in our energy level and you know, just maintaining that through the day.
And then finally, let's take it the next level up from just talking about individuals being creative and healthy and feeling good and productive. And mm-hmm. the fact that there's usually more than one person in an office, in a building, working together. What have you learned about how groups can be more creative and innovative based on the environment that they're in?
Well, part of it is coming up with rules of behavior. I'm going to start there because that is something that is free. You know, it's not something that you have to spend a lot of capital dollars to rearrange your space. But behavior is a big deal. And, you know, using speakerphones in the middle of an open office environment without asking your colleagues if it's okay and, you know, not getting a room, or, you know, walking up behind somebody when clearly they're really focused on something and, hey, can you help me out with this, Bob or Brad or Sue, whatever. You know, it's coming up with rules. And sometimes that seems a little odd that you have to come up with rules of behavior for the office. But in truth, a quick conversation with somebody like, hey, I'm totally, you know, part of it is the ownership of the person who's really trying to be creative, or the team who's really trying to be creative. Like, hey, can we reserve this room for a day? Or, hey, can we use this this open area for a little while, or this wall so we can pin some stuff up, nobody take it down? I think that's really important. I think also picking up on the wall idea, there's a lot of emerging evidence that shows that actually having a wall dedicated to a project or your team is really good. Somehow, when we map things out on a wall, kind of like they do in the crime investigative, you know, things, or you'll see architects, you know, put things on a wall, or creatives. And that is really important, the ability to be able to kind of map out your ideas physically. So finding a space, a wall, you can even, we sometimes will take homosode or, you know, other sorts of boards, super inexpensive, and just, if we don't want to mess up the walls, and just tilt them up against a wall. And use that as a pin-up space. I find that it's surprisingly important for memory recall and for managing large complex projects over time. We try to manufacture that through screens. You'll see a lot of organizations are able to put lots of screens on the wall and do the same thing. But it takes a lot of technology, and there are a lot of lower tech approaches that I think would work even more and be even more interesting maybe to look at. Or to engage a team in. But that is, those are a couple things.
I love the fact that you mentioned sort of high-tech versus low-tech, because one of the things that I get frustrated by is when companies think that just throwing technology at people is going to improve their performance. And the first example that comes to mind is things like electronic whiteboards that cost, I don't know, 1,000 times as much as a regular whiteboard and just allow you to get a scan of what you put up, when in reality, just a blank piece of paper or a normal whiteboard, now where everyone's got a mobile phone, can just take a picture of it. Is there something to be said about the simple tools being just as good as some of the more high-end fancy tools, or are there ones that you think really make a fundamental difference?
You know, I think that there are some pretty amazing tools out there on the horizon. Many of them are in the Department of Defense right now, and I've taken a look at them, but I haven't really seen them hit the market yet. And the government really is a wonderful place to spawn, you know, just nothing like a war or something where you really need to rally and spend a lot of resources to figure out cool high-tech stuff to get the rest of us, the rest of industry, to kind of build on that. We, of course, love our phones. I couldn't live without it, you know, and my laptop and all that sort of thing. But I think that... yeah, the low-tech, high-tech, especially around, you know, you mentioned whiteboards, things like that. I think that we keep trying to make our offices nice and neat and clean and perfect pen, perfect, you know. And the truth is that the organizations that I've visited that are really cool, high-tech, pushing, or not high-tech, they're highly creative, pushing that envelope are not necessarily so clean and neat and perfect. And it's hard for architects to accept sometimes because we love things perfect and white and nice little red wall over here. You know, we're very kind of modernist often in our approach. But the truth is that to really be creative, it needs to be a little messy, not a lot messy, but enough so that you feel like you can experiment. And so this kind of laboratory, bring the laboratory into your space a little bit more, I think is really, really helpful. If you go to MIT and if you go to some of these places that are doing really exceptionally creative work, it's pretty low-tech buildings that are often using high-tech devices, but in a way that's allowed to be messy. And I think that also ties in with high performance and lots of other things. I was thinking about some of the companies where people are just really, really at their peak. I mean, you can tell these people are performing great. You look at the numbers, you know they are. And they show up in casual clothing because you never know if they might want to do a plank in the middle of the hallway or, you know, use their space as an exercise area or for Nerf fights or whatever. You know, like there's a little bit of take away the precious. And I think there's professional and then there's, you know, creative. And I think we can find a mix. I think we can find a blend of that. I think also often creatives are often a piece of a larger company. So you're a bank, but you have a little creative group that's within a much larger organization and you're kind of having to use their branding rules and, you know, things like that. So maybe it's carving your own space, but calling it a lab or giving yourself permission to kind of rebrand your area to be something a little different and permission to break the rules, I think is important too.
I mean, that's a wonderful insight. I hadn't thought about the fact that the way that you either prevent people from experimenting by saying everything needs to be perfectly clean, that does instill this mindset of, okay, I need to be super careful around everything. Whereas if you give people a little bit of leeway around trying out new things, that's always going to result in some crumpled paper every now and again or things stuck on walls where, as you say, the white lines wouldn't recommend that they be. I think that's one of the big takeaways for me. Allow them to express themselves and experiment a little bit. We're coming up to the end of the interview, unfortunately. I wish we had more time, but one thing I like to ask all of the experts is, if you've got one recommendation of a tip or something that people can try out to enhance their ability to be creative or innovative in an office environment, based on your experience and your scientific insights, what would you recommend they try?
I would try there's so many different ideas. Maybe the best one to try that we've talked about already is this idea of using green. So you can create a green wall by printing out an image of ivy and, you know, literally just kind of stack it up against the wall. You can buy a fake plant from IKEA. They're very good. Put it around your desk. You can put a beautiful landscape image on your computer that reminds you of someplace wonderful that you might have visited. That has the same biophilic effect. And that ability, again, to relax and restore the mind is exactly what we need to get those creative juices flowing, remove the, you know, hair-like trigger that is our amygdala and our, you know, old world brain that gets really stressed out really quickly. Anything that we can do to kind of continually kind of keep it at bay. So that we can use our executive function and our creative brain more effectively, I think is a great tool to try.
Lee, it's been wonderful speaking with you. If people want to find out more, we're going to get all the links up on screen, but can you just let them know where those links are going to take people?
Sure, leestringer.com, L-E-I-G-H, Stringer, like it sounds, .com. And lots of my latest research, books. Of course, you can go to Amazon and get my latest book. But really, I try and put the most interesting recent research there and share it, send you the links to the original article so you can check it out for yourself.
Perfect. It's been wonderful speaking with you, and I look forward to speaking again with you soon.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you so much.
Congratulations on being part of the Innovation and Creativity Summit. I'm sure that if you continue to watch the other expert interviews, you will experience an improvement in your capability to turn your ideas into something valuable. But don't forget, to get the very best experience and ensure you don't miss any of the priceless lessons, you should invest in yourself with the All Access Pass. Not only will this give you exclusive lifetime access to watch all the lessons whenever is best for you, you will also get all the interviews as downloadable audio files so you can learn on the go, full transcripts so you can read and analyze the great advice and tips, and exclusive bonuses not available to anyone else. Click the link below to get your all-access pass now.